ว่ามันเขาเลยกูมาอยู่ตัวแหวนก็สิแจ้ง Assistant Majority Leader of the New York State Assembly, and Professor of Political Science at Queens College, and Dean Gisbert. He had wonderful memories of association with his late blessed father, who served the American Jewish Committee with distinction. Communication from him and from Professor Aaron Schwartz, Dean of Jewish Studies at his college, he is deeply appreciated. Their establishment and support of the Queen Black Jewish People to People Project is both a symbol and a substantive contribution to a vital, compelling goal that hopefully all of us here tonight share. The overcoming of misunderstanding and the advancement of knowledge, mutual respect, and cooperation between the Black and Jewish people and communities in the context of a profound common concern for the welfare of our beloved American Democratic Republic. Let me be clear at the outset about my mandate as I see it this evening. I speak here as an individual, only for myself, exercising my democratic right through speech. While I believe that I may express the feelings and views of many, perhaps most, I don't know, in the Jewish community, what I am about to say does not represent the official positions of the American Jewish Committee, and certainly not those of the American Jewish community, which is characterized by diversity and a plurality of views, as is true of every other religious, racial, or ethnic group in our democratic society. Why are we here this evening? Why is there such an impressive turnout of people in this community coming together tonight at Queens College? This is not an easy evening, either for Reverend Justin Jackson or for myself. If the biggest and extremists in our society had their way, this evening would not have taken place. The fact that Jesse Jackson and I made our own separate decisions to share this platform in the face of threats, slander, and intimidations is a statement of our determination to reject hatred, bigotry, and verbal violence from whatever quarter it is issued. We do not, and we will not, debate the troublesome and disturbing episodes in Black Jewish relations of the recent past. But our purpose tonight, as I see it, is to try to find a better way, a more civil and constructive way, for Blacks and Jews to live and work together, as they have done, we must not forget, as they have done for much of their history during the past 25 years. I ask, why are we here tonight? And I want to try to answer that question out of my reflections and my experiences during the past quarter century or more. In 1968, I became involved with Catholic and Protestant leaders in trying to relieve the suffering of the victims of the Nigerian bathroom conflict. That exposure, day in and day out, to so much destruction of human lives, with tens of thousands of deaths of Muslims and Christians, and the incredible starvation of thousands of innocent children, literally transformed my life. While the Jewish agenda, the cause of Soviet Jews who suffer oppression still, the cause of Israel, the cause of peace in the Middle East between Jews and Arabs, the Black Jews of Ethiopia, who still suffer incredible oppression and poverty, among other difficulties, are constantly at the core of my consciousness. Since that experience of 1968, literally I have been driven to dedicate much of my waking hours to the problems of world refugees, world hunger, and international human rights. There are about some 12 million refugees in the world today, some 6 million of them in Africa, the largest refugee problem in the world, most of them living in desperate conditions. The serious fact is that most of these refugee tragedies to which I have been exposed or been involved are the result of religious, racial, ethnic, and tribal conflicts. In the Sudan several years ago, nearly a million black Christians and Arabs were massacred by Arab Muslim tribes from the north. In Uganda, President Idi Amin for life and his looting tribesmen slaughtered some half million black Christians, half of them Americans, half of them Roman Catholics. In India, there are unending slaughters of Muslims, Hindus, and Sikhs. In Sri Lanka, Tamils and Somalis destroy each other, all in the name of God and nation. The Iran-Iraq war has resulted in the death of an estimated 4 million human beings, many of them children 12 to 14 years old, told that by their martyrdom they assure themselves certain ascent to paradise. Lebanon, once the citadel of Arab Christendom, Lebanon was to the Arab Christian world what Israel is to world Jewry. The model of pluralism in the Middle East, as Lebanon has been, is now a very catastrophe. And who loses sleep over Ireland, where for more than a decade, Protestants and Catholics have been destroying each other? Religious, racial, and ethnic hatreds have become the engine of an epidemic of dehumanization in the world. Nowhere is that dehumanization more palpable and tragic than in South Africa. In October 1985, I went on a mission with the American Jewish Committee, our leaders, to South Africa. We met with a great many representatives from every segment of that blighted society, from Archbishop Tutu, black women leaders, the Sassy Elite Society, the leaders of the government, business, and the Jewish community. It is a nightmare, an abomination, to experience the chemistry of nationalist arrogance and religious bigotry. Two massive religious lines have dominated Western civilization, including the United South Africa, which is a Western country. Jews have suffered and have been destroyed by the 1900-year-old religious lie of genocide. The absurd notion that the Jewish people collectively killed Christ and therefore must endure unending punishment and exile. And some fundamentalist Christians in the religious way preach the absurdity that the Nazi Holocaust was God's ultimate punishment of the Jews for having elected to kill Christ. But apartheid is another such religious law. In the Dutch Reformed churches, it has been taught for generations as gospel truth that the black people have been cursed by God with a curse of Ham, the forebear of black people in the biblical story. Segregation and apartheid have also been justified as doing God's will. I saw the demonic power of that religious lie as I watched from afar in Soweto in 1985, watched dozens and dozens of young Africans leaping out of their hippopotamus troop carriers, there in Soweto, shooting black youths at will. And these young Africans, fresh off the farms, their heads filled with their church lessons, have been raised in a culture of religious and racial hatred and bigotry that has been indulged without limit. standards of individual narcissism, a group attributes to itself all virtues, and is confined to the outward, all vice, everything inferior. Such a group becomes totally self-centered and sees itself as naturally superior and sees the other as inferior, an infidel, a heretic, deserving of destruction. Dr. Strong calls such group conflict psychopathic behavior that is responsible for much of the group aggression, terrorism, and violence that pockmarks the world today. Across the human lives, that the human family is trained to such religious and racial hatred all over the world is staggering, beyond human comprehension. In the nuclear missile age, such psychotechnology without control could conceivably have to give, trigger off a nuclear holocaust. Blacks and Jews, all of Europe need to acknowledge that America is different, has been different, is different. For the past 200 years, our national and religious leaders have struggled mightily to establish an open, democratic, pluralist society. The true genius of America rests not on sending out automobiles and Coca-Cola around the world. The true genius of America rests in the reality that each religious, racial, and ethnic group comes to the common American table by right, as first-class citizens, and not by sufferers. Each group. Each group, religious, racial, ethnic, has its own agenda, appropriately, its own deeply felt priorities, and has a right to receive a fair and sympathetic hearing as a shared American name, while advocating its own agenda. At the same time, each of us has a simultaneous and collateral overarching obligation to serve the common welfare. American democracy is founded on a social compact, which is a very fragile instrument. Warming taught us how fragile, harangue has taught us how fragile that compact can become. That compact needs to be continuously nurtured by an intense commitment to civility and mutual respect. That does not prevent nor preclude constructive criticism of each other's positions or holding different views. By indulging religious or racial bigotry, reckless and uninhibited racial epithets, or anti-Semitic defamations, can beat this precious fragile social compact into the ground, into dust. My friends, America is the only nation on earth that has not been despoiled by religious war. We have not had 100-year wars. We have not had 100-year wars of a religious character as one finds all over the European landscape. We have had far too much of racism and anti-Semitism, of lynchings, and verbal violence. And let me tell you that the canard, the obscenity, the Zionism, is racism, is just such an expression of defamation and verbal violence. Of the natural demagogues, and of such moral courage and integrity is credibility in makeup. At their height, and at their most productive, black Jewish relations in the 1960s and the 1970s were a paradigm of democratic pluralism at its best. The essential reason for that extraordinary, indeed historic cooperation was well formulated by our colleague Albert Wurzban, who would not be a piece of the New York Times, recall how in 1964, the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was challenging, together with Jesse Jackson and Andy Young and many other friends and colleagues, Dr. Martin will continue to challenge racial discrimination in public accommodations. In St. Augustine's Park, there was a fierce resistance from the sheriff and the police, as well as from the White Citizens Council and the Ku Klux Klan. And Martin Luther King sent a telegram to the conference that was then meeting in Atlantic City of the Central Conference of American Rabbis. And he appealed for their help. Literally within hours, that very day, 16 rabbis came to St. Augustine, where they joined Dr. King and his brothers and sisters. They entered the black church and joined in common prayer and mutual solidarity. And then they went off to try to integrate a lunch counter in the face of incredible hatred, contempt, anti-Semitic and racist obloquy. All of them, Martin King and all around him, and the 16 rabbis, were all forced like electric cattle prods into a cell in the prisons of St. Augustine. A number of them had their lives threatened. Why did you rabbis engage in acts of civil disobedience? Why were they then prepared to go to jail? Almost spontaneously at once. First battle of followed. He said the answer is simple. Martin Luther King Jr. No other person could have evoked such an instantaneous and unfavorable response from us. With Dr. King, there was implicit trust, a profound bond of mutual respect, and a deep sense of solidarity with his mission and that of his people. We respected him because he was intellectually keen and a powerful orator. His disciple was not too bad either. And just when asked, we loved him because he cherished the glory of racial and religious diversity. He despised black separatism as both wrong and counterproductive. He saw the civil rights revolution not as a black rebellion, but as a covenant. White and black, Christian and Jew, standing together for decency. To Dr. King, justice was a seamless web. Anti-Semitism and anti-Catholic prejudice, like racial bigotry, were anathema. His goal was not only justice for America's blacks, but human rights for all peoples and peace everywhere. Then was perhaps, if, as I believe, Mayor Kahane is essentially a problem Jews must face and resolve, so the Reverend Louis Farrakhan is a central challenge to the integrity and the future of the black community. Black Jewish relations are bigger than Louis Farrakhan or Mayor Kahane. And we still have much in common to transcend our demagogy and our Christians. As Dr. King never tired of pointing out, blacks and Jews have common enemies, not just in the 1960s. We've been your kinds this week on what is happening on 16 major campuses in America. The racism has begun to erupt again against young black students on college campuses. Read what is happening in the far north of America, where the Aryan Brotherhood, the Christian Identity Movement, and the Boston Commandantes, joining together with the Klan, are now trying to create a denial that the decline of the farms of America, the breakdown of the family farms, one of the great tragedies of this country, is due for one reason only. The Jewish conspiracy of America has set out to buy out the farmland of America. It is the Jewish conspiracy that is responsible for the crisis in the farm belt. They have not gone away. They're always beneath surface. have a shared history of oppression. That gives us a shared vision on a compassionate and open society. And my friends, we need each other. I spoke today to our Washington brother, friend of my own father, about problems related in South Africa. And he talked to me about the incredible cooperation between congressmen who are black and the Jews. And he said, no two other groups in the United States Congress vote together as consistently for their respective agendas as do the Jews and black congressmen in the United States Congress. And they are advancing a common agenda, protecting the poor, the increasing poverty, especially among the upper class, from the social cuts which have taken place over the past 4 years, working together on the problems of unemployment, on family life, on education, on fair housing, drugs, crime, violence, resisting together the violations of the separation of church and state, which continues from now, from the radical right, week after week. Together working for the security of the state of Israel, speaking out for Soviet Jews and others denying their human rights, opposing together apartheid in South Africa and racism at home, despite the irritations of the conflicts that cloud black Jewish relations, even on such dangerous issues of affirmative action, where there can be legitimate and constructive criticism, there is still a bond that links Jews and blacks together. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. reports a black-Jewish bond in love, devotion, blood, and greed. The great promise we Jews can take to remember that superb religious leader as political activist is to nurture and strengthen that bond, which was and must remain a blessing for America and for the world. I can only hope and pray that this shared evening with Jesse Jackson, whom I've known for many years, will mark a turning away from the aberrations and the deviations of black Jewish relations of the past and will return us to the higher of justice, mutual respect, mutual support and solidarity. For the sake of the black and Jewish peoples of our nation, and above all, for the well-being of this great American democratic society which we love. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, great privilege for me to introduce the gentleman. who was appointed by Martin Luther King early on in his career as director of Operation Breadbasket, which was the economic arm of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. Later in 1971, organized Operation Push, People United to Serve Humanity. I remember reading about it then, what struck me, the theme of this self-help organization, if I may characterize it. The theme of it was people, poor people, oppressed people, victims, fighting their way out of their organization by themselves, not depending on others, but on their own self-worth, on their hard work, on their own capacity. Then later organized the Push for Excellence and Education Program. He has been a leader in the rock community for several decades. In 1983, he began his candidacy for President of the United States. He was a leading candidate in the 1986 election. As a politician, I note that he received 3.5 million votes in the primary, 22% of the vote in the Democratic primary. He won 4 states and Washington, D.C. He is a renowned orator, thinker, philosopher, community leader, not without controversy, but certainly one of the great leaders in America today, ladies and gentlemen, the Reverend Jesse Jackson.
Led by the ministers, the pilgrims there,
that dangerous void you call it lack in search of religious freedom. And yet, ironically, when they try to kill themselves, they deny to others, forgetting ascension, persecuting friends, demanding adherence to strict sectarian life. There are other examples, too, of early religious teachers who preach and practice tolerance and respect. The Baptist minister, Ron Williams, founded the Continental Island on the principles of religious tolerance. The Quaker minister of Pennsylvania, fleeing persecution at home, offered sanctuary to others. And not coincidentally, Fair Play to Native America, an American first, and too long, an American holiday. Religious leaders stepped to the front line of leadership in the fight to abolish slavery. John Brown, Frederick Douglass, both deeply religious, used their talents from the platform of pulpits and their moral authority to speak out against the evil of slavery. Insist that this nation live up to its own best principles of freedom and equality. Meanwhile, fields and cabins, slaves told each other the story of the Exodus secretly at night, a similar proof and invention. In the black communities of slaves and freedom alike, the religious leader was most often also the political leader. The natural result was strong cohesive communities, their own internal social structure, political and other economic resources of the political authority. There are similarities between these black communities in the 19th and early 20th century and the Jewish communities of Eastern Europe during the same time. There too, the rabbi was likely to serve as teacher, civic authority, and negotiator with the outside world. Who better to articulate the hopes and goals of his community? Who better than the tradition of Moses speak out to civil authorities on behalf of the oppressed? Rabbi Mark Kenlaw and I come to this meeting to speak from our different perspectives. We begin by acknowledging our common experience. As Jews and African Americans, our people have gone through this life to be slaves. Among all the people in the world, we explicitly remember that experience, reminding ourselves and our children that we were slaves in the land of Egypt and in the United States of America. As we remember slavery, we celebrate emancipation. We value and take joy in our freedom. Knowing it is brought to us by God's grace and protected by constant human vigilance. Jews and blacks have traveled different journeys. We share our history, the experience of oppression. Both our people have suffered from harsh and painful government. The blacks have been enslaved, legislated and enforced by government, first by years of institutionalized, legalized discrimination. Again enforced by the agencies of our own government. With you, the witnesses of the Holocaust, the horror of rulers gone mad, the murderers of human beings, from babies to grandparents, and the search for safety and refuge from which to let the rural governments turn away. The Holocaust members oppressed, and the rest of prayer. Because we suffer from the murderous attacks of bad government, carried out in the name of the law, carried out by people even wearing a uniform of the law, because we experience the horror of governance for evil, we must be perpetuated to the standards of government throughout recent history, will make our lessons clear. When President Reagan announced his plan to travel to Pittsburgh and forgot Second World War, I was shocked. She got shocked that in spite of appeals from government officials and the public, he would be at home and my language from my sister, and the theory was always with them to that history. Before the day, my whole talk to this trip, I spoke to people who are powerless on the Holocaust here on the wall. I spoke to you with that, the local lawyer. In those lawyers, you certainly let leverage our greatest gratitude and congratulations for an honor well deserved. As well as U.S. Dr. Paul Cross of Boston, the former state education superintendent in Massachusetts, in Indiana, in Maryland, and African American. Dr. Cross, a distinguished African American, told me of his own personal experience as a soldier in the United States Army in 1945. At the moment before his years, he was with the black battalion that was reserved against that attack. Those troops approached this dead camp, which was so eerie and silent, they were fired. They thought it was a military camp held by the Germans. It was a dead camp. They saw the piles of bodies and knew they were in the presence of an incomprehensible tragedy and constantly meeting. But they also assumed that German soldiers were hiding within the camp walls, waiting to attack them. Inside those silent buildings, remaining Jewish prisoners were huddled in fear. They heard the approaching footsteps and assumed the worst, that German soldiers were returning to finish them off. Then crosses the German out, they realized these soldiers were black and could not be Nazis. The prisoners. The prisoners, both of whom had never seen a black, rushed out when they saw them. In stark disbelief and in passion relief, they embraced. They were informed. Both were shot. Both stood momentarily paralyzed on the cutting edge of history. Mutual fear and insecurity had been transformed into mutual security and rescue. Black got to the cow and moved to all concentration camps first. These are stories that must be told and tell and taught. It is the spirit of false moments of triumph that must be recaptured and nurtured and never let go. Written on the moments were misinterpreted not just for blacks and Jews, suffering and rejecting everyone. But the entire community of the suffering and the survivors, the Hispanics, the Asians, the Arabs, Native Americans, the Central Americans, and the people of the Caribbean. This true story of Dr. Fox and that cow is one of the most important lessons of our time. In the years, inmates and liberators, each thought the other was the end. Separated by the dead camp walls, they feared the worst. When they opened their eyes and they saw for themselves, they realized the truth. That we must look at each other squarely, recognize our allies, walls and ignorance have kept us apart. We must tear down the walls, open our eyes, smile from our tears, open our hearts, to one another, to give the deed of the wall. And so today, when we look at the situation with the home, we see an example of greater punishment. The even more chilling because it involves the young whom we have had and have such